space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Are you curious about the origins of the human race? Join me, Gavin McCall, and a variety of guests on Ancient Humans, where we decipher world events, explore scientific theories, personal stories, myths, mysteries, and lore about the history of the human race.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fedge, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to...
Hey, Frosty, how are you doing?
Doing well. Just doing some paint in the kitchen here and kind of getting things spruced up.
Awesome. You know, I wanted to pick up during the second hour of the show here with something you had mentioned last time that I kind of followed up on a little bit. Mm-hmm. That 30 million people die of starvation each year. So I did a little research on what the population...
It's actually 12 million. Four million children and 8 million adults.
Now, I went to a website, and I'll have to give you the URL
for okay.
this. And this, I don't know who's accurate here, but they are saying it's www.theworldcounts.com.
Okay.
They are saying 30 million people die from hunger each year.
So, boy. Oh, it's more than.
You might have to just Google it. It's a long URL. How many people?
Okay, well, yeah, I can punch it. Holy shit! 25,000 people lose their lives every day as a result of hunger.
Yeah. It's 30 to 35 million, according to this website. And what I did is I took the population of Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Tennessee. Ohio's 11.9 million, Kentucky's 4.4 million, Indiana's 6.6 million, Tennessee's 6.7 million. Now, can you imagine if four states' worth of people died every year? Now, our media... you know, the greatest disaster, I mean, you know, you see these mass shootings, and which are bad things, and a few people are killed in these mass shootings, but the gigantic disaster, the equivalent of 4 medium-sized states in the United States die of starvation each year. That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know, and again, you probably wonder how I even keep any kind of a positive attitude or even a positive demeanor because my head is so full of all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I work out, like I said, 2 hours every day, 6 days a week. And I go ride my bicycle to cleanse my mind and my spirit. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing because NPR came on yesterday. And I keep up with what's going on, and they were talking to some lady who was on the Megan Scott show on The Pulse, and it was an hour interview.
Wow.
And she's talking about how to mitigate, you know, climate change. Well, and you know, I was in Antarctica 20 years ago. I wrote about it. I worked with the National Science Foundation. I saw the climate models and the changes that they had projected because of the carbon footprint. And so I knew it then. I wrote about it, you know, and all that goes with it. And of course, nobody ever picked up on it. And so here they are on NPR, and she's telling us how we're going to carbon sequester. We're going to inject carbon into the limestone in Nevada because it's got porous. And I'm sitting there, and so I wrote, fresh air, things that matter. I just heard this 1 hour Megan Scott, The Pulse interview with this university professor with a PhD from, I think it was Vermont University. And that one single word about what's driving it, overpopulation.
Hmm.
You know, I'm telling you, it's enough to drive you crazy because I've tried to get on NPR for the last 20 years, tried to get on 60 Minutes, or tried to get on Face the Nation, Meet the Press. They absolutely suppress any mention of human overpopulation. And yet here's hunger. According to Hunger World Poverty, 21,000 people die globally every day from hunger. Right here, right in front of me.
It's beyond belief, isn't it? It's just so staggering.
Yeah, a child dies of hunger every 10 seconds. Every 10 seconds. 4 million a year.
And what I brought up last show about, you know, if we gave all the, you know, you always hear the story about the whole population of the earth can fit into Texas, and they always say 7 billion people in Texas, and then I made the whole thing about, well, let's give each one of them a cow to eat in their whole life, and then that'll be... you know, if you need 2 acres per cow, that would be about 14 billion acres just for the cows to support.
Right, your numbers were just devastating, obviously.
Yes. it's all of the United States, Canada, Russia, and South America would be used to support the cows of the 7 billion people. But the issue, I mean, if everyone in the world, and maybe you can elaborate on this, if everyone in the world would eat like a person from the United States, what would happen to the biosphere?
Oh, it would collapse. Just the methane from the cows.
That's incredible.
Oh yeah, the methane alone from the cows. You know, and what's happening with the global catastrophic climate destabilization is it's warming up the tundra in Siberia. And so the methane is escaping. And so you've got all that to deal with. You know, here's another fact. You can look it up on populationmedia.org. 1,000 children in India die of diarrhea or dysentery or other waterborne diseases every single day of the year.
1,000 die?
1,000 die in India every single day of the year from diarrhea or dysentery because the water is so polluted over there. And yet, they're still growing by 14 million a year. It's in my book. Yeah, and you know, what if 1,000 children under the age of 12 died of dysentery or diarrhea in our country every day? I guarantee you, heads would roll so fast. And yet, over in India, there's nothing they can do about it because they're just again, they're about to add 350 million more people. They're at 1.25 billion, headed for 1.55 billion right now.
If we're to look at the world situation,
yeah,
there's a few countries like the U.S. and Canada and just a few in Europe, yep, where the circumstances are still good, but most of the world is in complete chaos because of overpopulation.
That's correct.
And it staggers me that these people will come from India and come over here to work, and they just leave. The thing of it is these people are not fixing the problems at home.
No, of course not. They're just escaping. And they're chain migrating by the hundreds of thousands. Indians are coming into this country by the hundreds of thousands. Same with Chinese. Chinese are taking over BC, Canada.
Have they?
Oh, God. I've been going to Vancouver regularly for the last 40 years. And it was all Canadian city 40 years ago. 30 years ago, it had maybe 10% Chinese coming in. I'd say right now that it's probably more than half Chinese, probably more like 60% Chinese in Vancouver. All the signage is in Chinese. The schools are speaking in Chinese. The Chinese are buying out all of the Canadians. The Canadians can't even live there anymore unless they're just polishing shoes, literally, at the airport. But Vancouver is now called Hongcouver, and
really?
It's just like Hong Kong. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. More Chinese in Vancouver now than there are Canadians, white people.
If we could just get the mainstream media to just talk about some of these things, my goodness, you know.
They're hiding them, Mark. I mean, they're suppressing any kind of discussion here. You know, it's the same thing with, you know, there's 20, on average, 23 to 27 honor killings in this country every year now.
I don't hear about that. You never hear about that.
Yeah. Oh, you never hear about it. 500,000 cases of female genital mutilation, all of course, on the children of all the Muslims that are here, and there's 3.5 million Muslims. And so those numbers are going to continue to rise. And do you hear a single thing? And that report was by Assistant Director Ed O'Callaghan, February 2 of this year, at a White House press conference. And he gave the stats, and he's an assistant district attorney for the DHS.
My
and I took it all down because I used it in a couple of articles that I wrote. But nobody even flinched. And you would think that the feminists in this country would be going nuts with those kind of figures, because that's a 6th century barbaric religion killing its women. And, of course, worldwide, they kill a minimum of 20,000 women, honor kill them every year. But now it's over here in our country.
Well,
average of 23 to 27 a year.
Can you explain that a little bit more? What is honor killing?
An honor killing in the Islamic text is that when a woman talks back to her husband, she dishonors the family. Or if the man wants a new wife, then he thinks of a way that the woman has dishonored, and he will and he can and he does kill the first wife because he wants to have a second wife, and he can do that legally. If they are not escorted in the public by a family member, they could dishonor the family. If they have sex with anyone outside of who was chosen for them, because all marriages in Islam are arranged. There is no such thing as falling in love in Islam.
Hmm.
And so anytime that a woman, and of course, women are only one half the value of a man. A man can divorce a woman by just saying that he has to say three times that he divorces her in front of two other men, and then he annuls the marriage right there. Any daughter that they want to kill. In fact, it was in Rocky, in Ohio there, two falls ago, Rocky River in Ohio, just south of the border of Michigan there, a Muslim father shot, you can look it up on the internet real quick, just look up Rocky, I think it's Rocky River, shot his daughter twice in the head while she slept because she was wearing jeans. And she was dishonoring the family, and he shot her twice in the head while she slept.
So honor killings can be for many reasons. Like, it could be for adultery, but it can even be for wearing clothing that they think is not appropriate.
That's right. I'm looking this up right now. This thing, okay, Honor Killing Rocky River, Ohio. That was about 2015. Yep, Rocky River. Dad killed his daughter because of disrespect. This Rocky River is just outside of Cleveland.
Did he get prosecuted?
Yeah, he did.
Well, that's good.
Rocky River father admitted Tuesday that he shot his daughter to death because he felt she disrespected his rules about coming home late and failing to clean up her room. James Mansour, 64, pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter and felonious assault. The death of Tahani Mansour, a pharmacist at the University Hospital. Judge sentenced him to 22 years in prison. Prosecutors and defense attorneys recommended sentence him to 15 to 25. I say sentence the son of a bitch for the rest of his life. But anyway, he's out about 22 years. 22 years.
Are men allowed to have more than one wife in Islam?
Four. They get to have four.
Okay, four.
That's why they're outbreeding. They're outbreeding everybody, and they're all on welfare over in Europe. Of course, all the Muzzies are on welfare in Detroit, and they're all on welfare in Miami. They're all on welfare in New York City. They're all on welfare in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, when you know as much as I know, you see your own country just devolving into this god awful nightmare. And I'm 72 years old, or I'll be 72 here in a month and a half. And I mean, what do you do? And nobody understands how fast this is happening to us. It took 400 years for Rome to fall. We're going to fall within a century, within 60, 70 years.
Or maybe less.
Or maybe less, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, what's happening?
You hear of Thomas Whittem? Thomas, his name is Thomas, he wrote a book called Civil War II. The Coming Breakup of America.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed him 15 years ago when I had my own radio show. His name is Thomas. He's my age.
Is he still he's still around?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how you get a hold of him, though.
Oh, okay.
His book was Civil War II, The Coming Breakup of America. I'll look it up in my records, and I'll send you the... I did a three-part series on his book.
Well, I would like to do that if he's still doing interviews.
Well, I don't know because I don't know how to get a hold of him.
Okay.
I'm sure you could find him.
Well, that's one of the things I see in our future. I see a civil war.
Oh, yeah, I do too. Oh, without a doubt. There's no way we're going to escape civil war. It's going to be a racial conflict. Par unbelievable.
You know, and I thought this immigrant caravan might be the first stage of it.
Could be. It depends on, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. They're still coming. I think they're somewhere a lot, like 700-800 miles away. And it's a big joke that a bunch of women are carrying they must be getting some kind of trucks hauling them. But how do you haul 14 or whatever, 12,000 people. It's a mess.
That's crazy. It is crazy. Now, you know, another interesting thing kind of on a different topic is,
yeah,
aren't there a lot of empty homes in China right now?
No, because China is growing by 8 million net gain per year because of what is called population momentum. Even though they're having one child per woman, there's 1.4 billion of them. And so all of these pregnant women are still having more kids and growing the population by 8 million per year. And so they don't have any spare homes. No matter how many people migrate out of China, they're still replacing them just as fast or better.
And they have about 1.3 billion people now?
1.4. And they're expected to hit 1.5 billion by mid-century.
My goodness. So do they still have the one child policy, or?
That's what I understand, but I think they've somewhat changed it for the very rich so that the very rich can have two kids.
I there's one statistic here is that for every square kilometer in China, there are 139 people.
Yeah, it's pretty packed. I mean, I've been to China and I've spent a lot of time over there, and it's they've got apartment buildings. I mean, you can't believe everything's sky high. They got 50 lanes of traffic. 50 lanes of traffic. Look it up too. I was on one interview and they couldn't believe me. I said, just look it up on Google. They'll show you the pictures. And he said, oh my God, 50 lanes of traffic.
Yeah, I did that. I was totally amazed when you said that. Now there are 363 people per square mile, I think, in China right now.
Okay, I'm not sure of that, but you can look it up.
But you've been over there. You've actually ridden your bike over there?
Yeah, sure did.
And you saw the rivers, and it's just a mess?
The Yangtze River and all the rivers running out of China are absolutely just completely sewer pipes. They're just literally loaded with every kind of chemical, every kind of sewage. I mean, the Chinese don't care about the environment at all. Neither do the Indians. I think the latest was in the India. 60.2% of Indians don't have a toilet. 60.2% of all Indians do not have a toilet to take a crap or piss in the morning.
What a strange society. I had no idea it was like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's documented. Yeah. Like I say, and they just keep having, they're averaging 14 to 16 million net gain every year in India.
No wonder people are leaving.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, Indians come over here. And of course, Indians are reasonably, the ones that come over, they're chain migrating. They're reasonably intelligent, but it doesn't take much intelligence to run the motel chains. And they have taken over all of the independent motel chains. Now they're working up and starting to take over like Motel 6. And the reason they're doing it is because they're very efficient and they run them. And, they get all the loans and then they chain migrate and then they buy another motel. And I've seen Indians in the middle of Texas, in the middle of Arizona, in the middle of New Mexico, in the towns that are just for crap, and they'll maintain those motels, and that's how they operate. Uncle Sam gives them all the money to buy them.
I'm in the software industry. I'm a software engineer, and I work with a lot of people from India.
Yeah.
And they never talk about home. They never, ever. I've never had one ever talk about what's it like back in India.
Well, I can tell you what it's like back in India. It's a shithole. That's what it is. I mean, think about it. 60% of Indians do not have the use of a toilet. What do you think they do?
They can only do one thing.
That's right. In the streets, in the ground, in the water, in the lakes, in the rivers. Everywhere. They're just like animals.
You know, it almost seems like we need to be going to some of these other countries and trying to help some of these people with their problems. You know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe if we could get them to start fixing their own problems, they wouldn't be so wanting to immigrate over here.
Well, yeah, if you could, but you can't change culture. And again, I think I said it, you know, you could go over and save Africa, but the average IQ in Africa is 68. And an intellect drives a culture, drives a civilization, drives a society. And when you look at Africa with a 68 IQ, I mean, if it wasn't for the white man, they still wouldn't have a wheel over there. They wouldn't know how to use a wheel. They wouldn't have invented a wheel because they just don't have that intellectual horsepower. They can't create their own sewage, water treatment plants. They can't even maintain them once they're created. And so you see what over there in India, there's a lot of smart Indians, obviously. But the ones that are smart, they just run from the ones that are dumb, and the ones that are, you know, just locked into the Hindu the Hindu religion is as bad as any religion out there, because it's got three classes, you know, and the untouchables are at the bottom. And if you're born into the untouchables, you remain illiterate your whole life. And virtually, if you're in the middle group of these people, you're also illiterate. And it's a cultural mandate. And so these cultures are stuck in these intellectual devolved nightmares, and you could fix them, but you'd have to be over there directing the fixing all the time.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? It's almost like there are different stages of evolution.
Right. Well, and you could say that Africa is an evolutionary disaster for all of the Africans because they just didn't get past a 68 IQ.
They're stuck in primitive. They're stuck in a primitive stage, right? Not that there aren't very intelligent black people in Africa, but it seems like there's a certain group that's stuck in this low evolution. And it's the same thing in India, right? I mean, they're very intelligent Indian people.
Right. There's some damn smart Indians. I've met a lot of them. I know a lot of them. There's Indians that I've met over here in population conferences that are just as smart as you and I. And they're as frustrated out of their minds because they love their country, but there's not a damn thing they can do to change its fate.
So what about these cultures is locking a certain part of their population into this primitive stage of evolution? Why haven't the more advanced people in that country, you know, kind of knelt down, so to speak, and helped these other people?
Well, the one thing I have found in my world travels and going through all of these third world countries, and that is this. They understand at the highest levels, there's no way to help these lower levels because they you can't help them. They don't have enough brain power to maintain their own standards of any kind of standards. And so what they do is they just, the rich and the powerful in these third world countries, they just simply live on top of a pile of shit, you know, a shithole, if you will, but they're on top of it, and they're in gated communities or they're off wherever they are to stay away from it so they don't have to be a part of it. But they know there's no way to change it. And so that there's no attempting to do that. And, you know, at some point in this country, we're going to have so much poverty. We're going to have so much starvation going on. I mean, the food, all the food stamps, there's, I think, about 44 million on food stamps right now. It was 48. It's gone down 4 million. But at some point, you're going to have so many people living in garages, living in U-Haul garages, living in storage garages. You're going to, under tarps, there's 90,000 living under tarp cities right out there in California and Los Angeles. I saw it this summer. I mean, I pedaled right through it. I got picture after picture. I could send you the pictures. And so at some point, there's no way you can't save them. So that's what's going on in India. There's no way to save all of that illiteracy. I'll give you an example. There's 7.6 billion people on the planet. 57 million die every year. Okay, 57 million die. Well, the third world not only adds 57 million to replace the 57 million that died, it also adds another 80 million. So in reality, it's 137 million people are added every year, new babies every year. 137 million new babies are added. How do you educate that many people if you don't have any foundation to do it? And of course, the answer is you don't. Hmm. And so what do they all do when they hit 13 or 14? They screw like rabbits and they have more kids.
So there is an upper class in these other countries that's intelligent, always, that's advanced, and they just separate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because there's no way to solve it.
That's so interesting. But that didn't that didn't really happen in the U.S. because here we have a middle class.
Right. It doesn't happen here. Even though we have such poverty, virtually everybody's got at least a toilet and a shower and running water that works, except maybe Flint, Michigan for a short time. But even Flint, Michigan now is, has had, I think, is pretty well solved.
Now they have, a bad water supply?
Oh my God. Yeah, it was, they changed from, I think they changed from Lake Huron. They turned right around and started pumping water out of a very polluted river, Flint River, I think. And then that started to had lead in it and everything else. And somebody was covering that up there in Flint to save money. And everybody was getting poisoned. And of course, Flint's, what, I think Flint's close to 90% black. And so there wasn't enough in there wasn't enough intelligence to start making noise until the consequences just overflowed. And then all of a sudden it became a national issue.
This is kind of off topic, but have you ever studied the housing collapse? What was it, in 2008 when that occurred, when all the mortgages went bad? Where people, they were giving people mortgages on houses and they didn't have a job and they didn't have any money or anything.
Right. That was the Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac and all the other they were trying to, what they're trying to do is put all these poor people into houses.
Right.
They were even putting illegal aliens into houses. I mean, they were just giving houses out. And what happened was there was no foundation for that person's ability. That's like giving a house to a homeless person. And so what are they going to do? Go out and earn enough to pay their mortgage. And of course, they just don't have the emotional horsepower or the educational horsepower or the skill horsepower to gain a job or even keep a job. And so you saw this massive debt, you know, coming in, and all these houses had to be repossessed.
And then the banks basically should have gone out of business, but we, I guess the taxpayer, didn't they?
That's right.
They just, the government bailed them out, right?
That's right. The U.S. taxpayer bailed all these banks out, and somebody made a killing on all that you know, that financial, you know, remuneration. I tell you, the things that are going on, but I can tell you this, you go to a third world country, the things that are going on in third world countries are 10 times worse than they are going on here in the United States.
So, I mean, this could happen again too, right?
Of course it could.
Yeah, especially with all the immigration, right? I mean, it would be very tempting.
Oh, yeah. You've got the costs of illegal immigration. You've got the cost of legal immigration, which is even more devastating than illegal. And so, you have a creeping socialism where there's fewer and fewer people that are hauling the hay wagon and more sitting on the hay wagon for a free ride. And at some point, when there's too many people on the wagon on a free ride, you know, food, water, housing, medical care, education, breakfasts and lunches, right on down the line, pretty soon you kill the taxpayer or the one that's hauling the wagon, and you see what happened in Venezuela.
What do you think the main causes of overpopulation is? Is it just a lack of understanding that people have?
I think for the most part, worldwide, it's just plain illiteracy. Again, Africa has got 1.1 billion people, and they're going to hit 2 billion by 2050 at the current birth rates. And the thing is, virtually most of Africa is illiterate. And so when you get a little child, when that 14-year-old boy gets 14, 15, he's ready to spread his sperm, and he does. And then all of a sudden, all these girls are pregnant. And you got all these babies. The same thing going on in India. Certainly the same thing in Indochina. Same thing in Mexico is going to add another 20 million people here. And you know, the average education in Mexico is around 6th to 8th grade. But if you only have a 6th to 8th grade education, you don't think much. You don't think about responsibility, or you don't think about sustainability. These young Mexican boys, they're just thinking about where the next señorita is, and they impregnate her. So, you know, that's where it's all coming from. And you know, again, all your first world countries, Mark, Canada, they've got a 1.9 birth rate. The United States, 1.95, I think, at this point, has been for since 1970. Europe has been between 1.4 and 1.8. Something even, I think in Italy is even about like 1.2 per woman. Australia, two children per woman. So all these Western countries, same thing like in New Zealand, they all went ZPG, essentially. They all went ZPG after 1970. But, you know, and there was 3.5 billion on the planet at that time. And then, of course, all these responsible countries went to ZPG. But the third world added another, and get it, you know, the third world added 4.1 billion people. 4.1 billion people.
Do you think that a warm climate could be part of this whole situation? Like, we see a warm climate in India, a warm climate in Mexico. Could overpopulation be more prevalent in the hotter climates?
Well, it certainly is a marker for people having, you know, more children. The thing is that happened in the last century was the extraordinary manifestation of tractors and planters and crop yields. And I think what happened was that we just had so doggone much food that it was the marker that allowed all of these people to have more kids without any understanding of the consequences. Because, I mean, my mom had five kids. Mm. You know, that's just the way it was. Five kids, and everybody had five kids. They had four and five kids. And it wasn't until the birth control in 1965 or so that you stopped having all these five kids. But, you know, and here it is right here. I think this is incredible. These two quotes, one's by James Howard Kunstler. The cheap oil age created an artificial bubble of plenitude of food for a period not much longer than a human lifetime. So I hazard to assert that as oil ceases to be cheap and the world's reserves move toward depletion in the 21st century, we will be left with an enormous population that the ecology of the earth will not support. The journey back toward a non-oil population homeostasis will not be pretty. We will discover the hard way that population hypergrowth was simply a side effect of the oil age. It was a condition, not a problem with a solution. That is what happened, and we're stuck with it. So that right there, if you really absorb that, just take that into your brain, your logical brain, he states exactly what happened. It was this 100-year window that we could produce as much food as we want because a John Deere tractor can literally make the fields grow and grow and grow and grow and the irrigation and grow and grow. And another one is by Walter Youngquist. He's an energy expert. He died just, I think, this year. He said, and I'm quoting, as we go from this happy hydrocarbon bubble, we have reached now to a renewable energy resource economy, which we must do in this century. Will the civil part of civilization survive? As we both know, there is no way that alternative energy sources can supply the amount of per capita energy we enjoy now from gasoline, much less for the 10 billion people expected by 2050. That's 3 billion more than we have now. Well, it's going to be a little more than that. And the energy is what keeps this game going. We are involved in a Faustian bargain, selling our economic souls for the luxurious life of the moment, but sooner or later, the price has to be paid, unquote.
Hmm.
Drink that quote in.
That's very profound. Did fertilizers play a role in this booming of crops?
Well, two things. Fertilizers, which are all oil-based, essentially, allowed us to grow the food, but the food has lacked the micronutrients. So it's kind of vacant food. It's vacant of the micronutrients. And in fact, the FDA came out, it takes, I think, 79 plates of spinach today to equal one plate of spinach back in 1940.
Wow.
Because, yeah, that's the FDA. 79 plates of spinach to equal one plate of spinach back in 1940. And here's another quote by Norman Borlaug, and he's the guy who created the Green Revolution, more crops per, you know, yield per acre. And he took the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, and he said, and I quote, "The Green Revolution has won a temporary success in man's war against hunger and deprivation. It has given man a breathing space. If fully implemented, the revolution can provide sufficient food for sustenance during the next three decades. But the frightening power of human reproduction must also be curbed. Otherwise, the success of the Green Revolution will be ephemeral only," unquote.
Well, that's got to be why people overeat, because they're not getting enough nutrients. So they keep eating and eating and eating. They're wanting more nutrients, but they're not getting.
Well, they're doing that, but also your fast food, which has become the main food processor in this country, puts excitotoxins like MSG into the food. So when you eat a McDonald's hamburger or Arby's, or you eat Burger King or any of all those, they have the MSG in there and any other of the excitotoxins. And what that does is when you eat the first burger, you get 2,200 calories in the burger and the fries and a Coke. And then you go buy another Big Mac, double cheese, double, bacon, because you're hungry for more food, even though you don't need it. But your excitotoxin, the MSG, actually creates forever hunger. And so you go out and you just have another Big Mac, and pretty soon your waistline just keeps growing. And 7 out of 10 Americans today are overweight. They're fat and or obese. And it's a national drama and not a very fun outcome.
Did you see that program called Super Size Me or whatever?
Yeah.
Where the guy, he ate McDonald's like every day. And after like 3 or 4 weeks, like, his doctor was checking his liver, and he was having liver problems and everything. Mm-hmm. And the color of his skin changed. He got real depressed. He had no energy. And he gained all this weight. It was amazing.
Oh, it's really sickening, because when you go to a grocery store, notice this. If you go to a grocery store today, you'll see all the advertisements. Eat Doritos. Have a Mountain Dew, have a Coke, have a Diet Pepsi, have a zero-calorie Coke. I mean, and soda pop is about the worst thing you can drink, period. It's got heart implications. It does so much damage diabetes-wise. It wrecks your system with 17 teaspoons of sugar. It just gets you hyped up, like Red Bull has got you just going like 1,000 miles an hour. People die on Red Bull of heart attacks. And that's been supported, and that's been documented. But you notice all these kids are eating Fruit Loops. Well, there's red dye number 6, 12, 14, 18, 19, and 20, because you got purple, you got orange, you got brown, you got white, you got yellow, you got all these dyes in Fruit Loops. And then you got tons of sugar. I mean, average person eats 166 pounds of sugar every year. And that's just like white death. You can't eat all that processed sugar without consequences. Why do you think we have so much diabetes in this country? And so anyway, you see all this. But now, if you go over to the produce section, are there any signs telling you to eat this apple because it's the greatest apple? No, the produce section was where I shop. Doesn't need any advertisements, because that's where the solid, nutrient-rich foods are. Kale, spinach, chard, cabbage, carrots, onions, broccoli, all the crucifers, onions, asparagus, tomatoes, apples, oranges, grapes, bananas. But do you see any big advertisements on them? You don't see squat. Why? Because they don't make all the money that a vacuous, you know, box of Fruit Loops makes. And in the end, all these big food manufacturers. That's what. Also, if you look at all like the jams from Smucker's, they've got high fructose corn syrup. Well, high fructose corn syrup gets you addicted to that high amount of sugar concentration, but it's also a GMO, genetically modified corn, creates, of course, the high fructose corn syrup. I mean, they put it in ketchup. They put it in all your food. It's in drinks. I mean, it's everywhere. And what do you do with poor consumers? They just don't know enough. They don't understand what they're eating. And that's why they get fat and they continue to get fat. And then they have heart attacks and they got cancer and they got diabetes and they got liver rot and they got everything under the sun. Really, the American consumer is a victim of the food stores.
You know, you mentioned Red Bull. That energy drink, you know, for some reason in my mind, and I don't know why I had this idea, I thought it was like a health drink or something.
yeah, it's a health drink. My patootie. Yeah, Red Bull is just laced with stimulants.
It has 37, laced. I'm reading here, it has 37 grams of sugar, 111 milligrams of caffeine. And they sold 6.3 billion cans of that stuff.
Right, and it just hypes your system up. It's literally got you living on the edge of your nerves. I mean, you're just hyped up. You know, I don't even drink coffee. I mean, I'm a high-strung person anyway. I've got a high energy level, and I've got a high personality level, and I don't need I get up in the morning, I drink 2 16-ounce glasses of water, filtered, just to make sure I get good, clean water. Been doing that every year. I mean, every day, every morning of my whole life. I started it in college. Just wash my system out. Clean out the kidneys. Clean out the stomach. Clean out the blood. Get the blood filled up with all this clean water. And here you see all these people. They're drinking Red Bull in the morning. They're drinking a cola. I knew guys back in college. All they drank was RC colas and cigarettes. And then beer on the weekends. What do you do?
Do you think some of these food safety organizations are getting paid off? Or, I mean, because some of them will even endorse things like Red Bull.
Yeah, money really goes a long way. I mean, you notice that Monsanto has blocked any chance for having GMOs actually labeled on foods across the federal thing that was actually signed by Barack Obama, which really surprised me, because Vermont was about to come out with all of their, they had the whole Vermont citizens voted in Just Label It. Go to justlabelit.org and you'll get all the information. But Vermont was signed in to have GMOs labeled so that everybody would know what they were buying and know what they were eating. And then Monsanto bent every congressman and senator's arm, and you know some money was being exchanged at the federal level, and they quickly passed a law that meant nothing, but it obliterated the Vermont law. And in fact, we tried to get 2 years ago in Colorado, we tried to get a label all the GMOs and circumvent that federal law, and Monsanto came in and spent, I think, $3 million. And they defeated it, because even intelligent people here in Colorado, you get enough advertising that hits emotionally. And they were saying, well, you shouldn't have any, people shouldn't have to go around and literally not have to be able to buy food that they want. It was food that they want. Yeah, GMO food, Doritos, et cetera. And all the bill was it showed you which foods were GMOs and which weren't. And it got voted down. I mean, because Monsanto paid for it.
No kidding. So they don't have to even let you know if it's GMO anymore.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's literally, you can go into the stores across this country right now, and there's no way you can figure out which foods are GMOs and which aren't.
That's crazy.
Now, in like in natural grocers, But unfortunately, you go to Whole Foods, and Whole Foods now bought by that 159 billionaire Bezos. He bought Amazon.
Really, Bezos? Well, really?
Yeah, he bought Whole Foods, and he said that GMOs are okay, and so we're not going to even worry about it. And so he's now on the bandwagon with GMOs, and the only safe groceries are out there is natural grocers. It used to be called Vitamin Cottage, but natural grocers. And there's also one called, I think it's called Superfoods up in Missoula, Montana, or no, Good Foods in Missoula, Montana. And there's also Modern Markets, and they're selling non-GMO foods. And you have to be a wary customer in the marketplace, and you've got to choose non-GMO foods, or otherwise you're eating all this crap. And nobody really knows in the end how bad GMOs are for you and what they're doing to your whole molecular makeup.
You know, that was
interesting. It's not good. There must be 10 books out there telling you how bad GMOs are for you.
I this just goes to show you that I'm kind of programmed too, and I don't even realize it. In my mind, I didn't realize that just even caffeine, too much caffeine, can kill you.
Right. Oh, caffeine is a major stimulant.
It's not that much either. I think it's like 15 or 20 cups of coffee literally may kill you. It's like I've read something like that.
Well, Red Bull has got that kind of concentration of caffeine, and it's caused heart attacks for a number of people.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what the statistics are, but I know that there's no question you can over caffeine yourself. You know, it's just like people who drink. You can drink yourself to death. You can literally paralyze your brain if you go on, all these drinking binges. All these colleges and all these big fraternities. There's been year in and year out, some kid goes and he binge drinks and he dies. He has an overdose of alcohol and he just stops his heart. That happens every year.
Man, you know, I want to get back just for a second on Jeff Bezos, because Bezos. I think this guy is so interesting because he's made so much money. He's worth like $132 billion now.
$159 billion. That's right.
See, I think our society, we need to do something about this. I mean, maybe you'll disagree with this, but I think after a certain, you know, after you're a billionaire so many times over, it just seems counterproductive to have one man that has $159 billion. And it just doesn't make any sense. You got all these homeless people, and it's crazy. Something's wrong here.
Well, you know, thankfully, with a measly $59 billion, Bill and Melinda Gates are actually doing something worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly makes you feel a little bit better, because he's giving back so much. And Warren Buffett was giving away billions of his dollars. So that's good. Yeah. But somebody like Bezos, I mean, my God, you know, you got $159 billion. Start giving $100 billion away to every charity on the planet. Help the SPCA to help the dogs and cats and other animals have a decent treatment. Help put money into the Humane Society. Put money into the National Bluebird Society. I mean, I put my money into the National Bluebird Society, SPCA. I put it into Greenpeace. I put it into the Sea Shepherd. I pick up trash. He could put that money into getting advertising to get a whole new 25-cent deposit return law here in the United States passed by all the states, because you can buy that much advertising, you can change people's minds to the good just as easily as you can change it to the bad, and you could actually get a 25-cent deposit return law in this country so that all the plastic and all the cans and all the tin and all the glass would all be responsibly recycled, over 99%. With a 25 cent per unit incentive. And so anybody that doesn't want to bring their their goods in, they can toss it anywhere they want. I guarantee you, you'll have an army of poor people and kids picking up a 25-cent can or bottle or tin or aluminum or whatever, and then recycled responsibly. It would save billions and billions. And so somebody like Bezos, he could do something like that. But when people get into that kind of a money thing, obviously they somehow they. I have found in my lifetime that there are extremists in everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the president of the United States is an extreme politician. The president of companies are extreme, you know, CEOs. Same thing, they're extreme athletes. You know, Michael Phelps is an extreme athlete swimmer. There's extreme football athletes. I mean, you can just go on down the line. And so for whatever the reason is, when they get all that money, they seem to want even more of it. I mean, when you look back at the robber barons back in the 1800s, Carnegie was a bastard.
Really?
I mean, J.D. Rockefeller, he was a double bastard. And then J.P. Morgan was just, I mean, these guys would steal the poor blind and let their mothers out to drink slop in the pig pen. You know, Carnegie, John Jacob Astor, Swift was, doing all of the canning, and he would can bad meat, rotten meat, shitty meat, the whole doggone thing.
On purpose.
For what? Profit. So
they would do it intentionally.
Oh, yeah, do it intentionally. You know, it's the same thing that's going on right now with the GMOs. There is plenty of science out there to tell you that GMOs are not good for your body, and they're down at the DNA level. They're not good. And there's book after book. You go to Natural Grocers and you can look up GMOs and it'll tell you all sorts of consequences. And because of money, people hide that information. They just hide it.
Speaking of books, do you want to plug a few while we've got just a minute or two left here?
Well, I'd plug, it's a movie called Health. I'd go on to Netflix and watch the movie Health, H-E-A-L-T-H. And then there's another one called What the Health. You know, we all say, what the hell? Mm-hmm. Well, this one is called What the Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, What the Health. And both those movies, they'll show you how to decipher on how poor eating. And they show you all the poisonous foods that are out there and the poisonous products and show you how to get down to the basics of good eating. And so, yeah.
Frosting.
I would highly recommend those two books, those videos on Netflix would help you find your way to eating better.
And look for Frosty's books too, folks. Thanks, Frosty. We'll see you.
Mark, thank you. Godspeed. Happy Thanksgiving.